You're listening to The Tastemasters with your hosts, David and Wyatt. All right, guys, we have a special guest with us. We have the head distiller of Holy Stone Distilling, Ethan. Ethan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, man.
Of course. We had an episode with Mike and Barbie, and that episode, they came on and just blew our minds with Holy Stone. And obviously, you are part owner as well with those two.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're the man behind the scenes. You're the one making the sexy spirits, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm the one that's turning the water into whiskey.
Into gold.
So to say, yeah.
Who is it? I want to know, who are you? Where are you from, Ethan? Why distilling? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, born in Colorado, but yeah, grew up in West Valley. So I'm a local boy. My whole life I wanted to figure out a way to make money making art. And so yeah, as I grew up, that changed from like, oh, I'll be an art teacher to, no, I don't want to be an art teacher and deal with kids and you don't get paid enough, you know? And then it was, I don't want to be, you know, I'll be an architect now, then I'm designing someone else's buildings, you know?
Yeah.
So I went kind of through that gambit of like graphic designer, you know, all these like art focused careers.
Right.
I ended up becoming an optician, and doing glasses and that sort of thing, and did that for a while, and then that got a little too corporate-y, and I was like, what am I doing? Let's, you know, and well, I want to make whiskey. So I went to High West, got a job there.
Oh, hell yeah. That's your first job in whiskey world is distilling world.
Yeah.
High West.
Yeah. So I've never distilled anything illegally. All of it's been, you know, on the books and on
nice.
Federally legal side and on the job training. So I've just been partially lucky and you know, surrounding myself with people that know what they're doing. And I've been able to learn a lot from all the folks that I've worked with over the years. But that's where I got my start, was High West. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I was there for a few years as their blender and safety coordinator. So, you know, I helped, I was part of the blending team. We did, you know, recipes, made sure that the batch variation was minimized. And, you know, blending whiskey is its own art and challenge that was cool to learn about, and get to, you know, taste a lot of whiskey. So
yeah,
nothing wrong with that,
it's
right?
Good. Sounds like
yeah.
a hell of a job.
Yeah. So then figured out that was a good call for me. And I moved to Oregon, was a distiller at New Deal Distillery in Portland. So I learned a lot from Tom Berclow. He's kind of one of the pioneers of the craft spirits industry. So they've been open for a long time and been making all kinds of good craft booze, artisan spirits, and so I made everything from rum to whiskey to gin to liqueurs.
You've done it all.
Done a lot of good liquid stuff.
Nice. I like that. That's really so cool. And so, yeah. So it's weird you say that you started as wanted to be like an art teacher, kind of wanted to be an artist,
mm-hmm.
and then you're now speaking your art through your liquor. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's super cool. And Wyatt and I have been blown away when Barbie and Mike came down and showcased your liquor. I think it's the first time Wyatt just kind of dropped his jaw and had to taste everything else. And I think it's really great what you're doing. But the one that I'm curious about is your absinthe. I guess that's the first one I want to talk about.
Okay.
The absinthe. Why absinthe? Why did you guys choose absinthe?
You know, absinthe has interested me for a long time. You know, I have a buddy, Fono, and he is the first person to introduce me to absinthe years ago. And, you know, he lives in New Orleans now, but a great guy. And that's kind of what started or sparked the interest in absinthe, was hanging out with him and Dan. And then I've just always wanted to make it. And it's a spirit that I was intending to make it. I was at Dinner Brick and we were talking about getting it started. Then when we parted ways, that's when I met Mike and Barbie. And, you know, I was like, oh, okay, this is an opportunity for me to finally pull out some absinthe. So Mike and Barbie had a great friend that has an amazing absinthe collection, and he was kind enough to share it with me. So that was part of my final research, was to make sure, yeah. like, where do I want to
do some testing?
Yeah.
Sure.
So we tasted a lot of absinthes, some older than 100 years old.
No way.
So,
wow.
Yeah. Some really rare, expensive absinthes. And I was lucky enough to have a tasty taste. So
did you do it in that cool style where you light it on fire, or that drip, that slow, Mike was telling us about the slow drip where it kind of like slowly drips over, is it a sugar cube? Right?
Yeah, so that's one way to drink it. I usually don't drink absinthe that way, but I'm a distiller, so I like to taste more of the alcohol. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a savory than a sweet guy.
Okay.
So the reason the sugar cube is used a lot with absinthe is because absinthe has some bitterness from the wormwood, classic absinthe, and the sugar cube sweetens it up.
Yeah.
Mm. So it brings some balance of bitter and sweet. It also waters it down, so you're proofing it down. So that's part of why legit absinthes are higher proof. Like ours is 123 proof.
Yeah.
I love so, like 123. Very so specific. You know, like it's not like 120 or 130. It's 123.
Mm-hmm.
I love it's just funny to me, but I like it. I like it a lot. Like yeah. that. And I mean, like it's specific and it's like it's right where it should be. You know what I mean? Like,
you
if there
it.
Were any more fire, like it wouldn't be great, but like it needs that fire too.
Mm-hmm.
And not that it's like there's a lot of fire to it, but solid.
Well, and part of that is if you do the sugar cube in the water, then you're not going to water it down, or you could water it down too much. But,
yeah.
you know, it's supposed to, lower if chance. You're going to do that, you want it to drink like a rum or something. So you yeah. want it to be at about 40% after you've added the water.
Nice.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll vary depending on how much you add, but that's part yeah. of why it needs to be higher proof.
After you've added the water, then it hits that normal spirit level.
Mm-hmm.
That's super cool. Dude, what are we going to open?
What are you feeling? Or what are you feeling right now?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'd drink any of it right now.
So all, just a suicide
David?
Of all of
yeah,
it?
Yeah, just all of them together?
Yeah. You know what? The shochu,
that's what
that
you're
one,
go for, shochu?
It's got the umami, like...
Yeah.
I can't explain it flavor,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so tell us about that one. I mean, that one, is this Mike's idea? Is this one your idea?
So this one is kind of born over several years. My friend Julie, she's at Tsunami, and we had kind of batted back and forth the idea of doing a shochu together back when I was at New Deal in Portland. And, you know, she's been at Tsunami a long time. But we'd been kind of talking about it. And finally, when we had the opportunity, you know, we talked again when I was at Holy Stone, we got going, and it just kind of made sense for us to team up with them and produce this unique spirit. Most Americans haven't even heard of shochu.
No.
But in a lot of the world, it's really popular. Japan, of course, has their versions. This is a Mugi shochu, so you can like immediately smell it as soon as you
yeah.
open that
yeah,
bottle.
Yeah, as soon as you open the bottle, just big whiff.
Yeah. So Mugi shochu is made with barley and rice and koji. So the koji is a mold. So we put together a koji room at Tsunami's headquarters. So it's a room that we can manage the humidity and the temperature. And so we steam their high quality rice that they use for their sushi, and we put it into a koji box, and I inoculate it with the koji mold. So it grows. It smells like, you know, good cheese.
Nice.
Stinky good cheese, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a very unique smell and flavor. It's used for miso, things like
okay.
that. So you can use koji for a lot of things. But what we're using it for is to break down the starches in the rice and help bring out the sugars and help the fermentation process.
Interesting.
So yeah,
is that what gives it this like funky flavor?
Yeah.
I don't know what to describe it as. Like
grape-like.
I want to say like almost like salty. And like seaweed, like it reminds me of the ocean a little bit.
Oceany.
Yeah, I mean the koji, like I said, it kind of has like a cheese.
Yeah.
Mold
like
smell
a stinkiness to it.
Yeah, almost like almost a stinkiness. But
every time I
it's
smell
a very
it
earthy
different.
Beverage.
Yeah.
It's only distilled once. It's fermented twice. So we do a fermentation with just the rice, and then a fermentation with the barley and the rice. And then it's only distilled once. And that's pretty unique in the spirits world. Most spirits yeah. are distilled multiple times to clean them up.
Yeah.
But that's part of why the shochu has a subtle haze to it. In Japan, the good shochus, the high-end shochus, are only distilled once. Part of that is because they're highlighting the ingredients that it's made from, and it's made using quality ingredients. And then it's also highlighting the fermentation process and the distiller's ability to kind of hone it in.
Yeah.
And with shochu, you want a good balance of funk, you know, that Japanese umami
yeah.
flavor. So that's part of what I tried to embody in the shochu.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do it basically the same way they did in the 16th century in Japan.
Right.
So
like, it's like samurai liquid.
Samurai liquid.
Right, like 16th century, like there were samurais roaming around. I mean, really until like the 17th century, but.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm imagining Moyamoto Musashi. This is probably his favorite drink, you're saying?
Probably.
He has a personal hero of mine. He really is.
I'm digging this one. So you guys are having a hard time. Where can I get this? If I were to, you know, go outside of this building, where am I going to get this?
You can only get this at a bar or restaurant that carries it or at the distillery.
And that's because it's not classified as?
So the DABC doesn't really, they don't sell shochu. If you want shochu through in Utah, you need to special order it, or you have to come down to Holy Stone.
Hmm.
Those are your options.
Is that because they're scared of it, or just because they don't know how to label it?
You know, part of it is that they don't understand it, and you know, have a category for it necessarily. But the other part is that shochu. Like I said, most Americans haven't heard of it.
Yeah.
So it's not a real popular product.
Yeah.
In this market. And with the way the DABC runs their inventory, it doesn't allow for any exploratory products that are like, hey, let's see how this does.
Right.
The DABC has carried shochu before, but usually not for very long because it doesn't move a lot.
Yeah.
And now they're reducing their inventory instead of increasing their inventory in the interest of sales instead of, you know, servicing the people. So
Right. Interesting.
So they're kind of flirting with this line between a public service that's paid for through our taxes versus a private business.
Yeah.
You know, if it was a private business, fine, manage your inventory however you want. But you're using our tax dollars, utilizing an inventory management system, which actually discourages business in our state and in this market, which is unfortunate. And hopefully that'll change. It seems like Governor Cox has a few, at least an open mind to maybe fixing some of that stuff. We'll see.
Presented, or not necessarily he, but I mean, Utah Congress is meeting right now. Like they started in, I think they meet in January till like March or April or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like some of the first bills they presented had to do with liquor laws in the United States. I mean, we talked about it.
Liquor laws in Utah. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. More bar licenses and try to figure out DABC stuff.
Yeah.
So hopefully.
And expanding DABC stores.
Yeah, more stores. But I don't know if more stores means less inventory or quality products or a better keep of said product. Because I feel like all DABC places have this warm warehouse where sun can get through and possibly destroy product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially beer. Like
beer.
I exclusively buy beer at breweries, local breweries. So that's the only place I buy beer. Unless I'm really in a pinch, maybe at the grocery store, but I still buy local beer.
Yeah.
You look at the canning date. Oh, this is canned last year.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not such a huge problem right now in, you know, mid-January, but...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you hit, like, July, then you're like, shit.
Yeah, it's still a concern.
So, speaking of beer, obviously, you know, the shochu is made with barley. Some of these others are, you know, distilled with grain. What's the process that leads into... like distillation, like, I mean, you've got to find that alcohol somewhere. Do you, my understanding of distillation, which is super limited and you're probably going to laugh, is like, essentially you make beer, like you take your wort, you add whatever yeast, probably like some sort of champagne yeast that doesn't add flavors, and you can get really high alcohol percentage and you ferment it as high as you can. And then you take it and add it to your distillation, whatever. Containers, tubes. I don't know.
You're still.
And then, you know, like out pops liquor on the other side, and like the rest of the process. Like, I'm curious how you get something like, you know, your vodka that is obviously made with like grappa and is like probably the best vodka I've ever had, versus something like the gin, and how you get the flavors into the gin, versus something like, you know, maybe a whiskey and like even like single malt whiskeys. Like I'm curious. Is like it's obviously a malted barley that they use in like a single malt whiskey, but like, do they use like a roasted malted barley? Does that affect the end product, or is it just kind of not really matter?
So that is a decent
there's like
outline.
19 questions in that whole spiel.
Fine. but yeah, that's a decent outline of the process, really. I mean, you know, whiskey. So like shochu is to sake as beer is to whiskey, or whiskey is to beer. So yes, you basically make beer.
Mm-hmm.
Without hops, and you distill it, and it becomes whiskey after it's been in touch with a with some oak.
Yeah. And so, so you are not only a brewer, but also a distiller. Not only a distiller, but also a brewer.
I wouldn't call myself a brewer because the beer I make is not beer you want to drink. Gotcha. You know, and I've made mead at home once and made some cider with some friends and things like that at home. Very different because when I'm fermenting to be distilled, whereas a brewer's fermenting to be drinkable beer.
Yeah.
You know, so our beer is a very different thing. So I wouldn't, there's no way I would feel confident stepping into a brewery and going, I'm going to make good beer,
gotcha. You know,
because my beer that I've been making isn't purposed for the same thing. Yeah. It isn't same. It's almost exactly the same process up to that point.
Right.
But the goal is just different.
So what's your perfect mash bill, I guess, for a liquor? Like, let's say, I mean, do you have a base mash bill or do you kind of go off of what you're trying to make? Is it different?
Yeah, it's different with every product is always different. So, and there's a lot of different ways to get liquor into a bottle. So there's a lot, that means there's a lot of different business models from companies that just buy alcohol and put it into a bottle and put their label onto it. To companies that go from beginning to end, make every drop from fermentation on.
And that's things like McKellen does that, don't they? I think they own their own barley fields.
I'm not sure.
A lot of the larger, especially Scotch distilleries, do stuff like that. Yeah. They don't necessarily own the farm where the barley's grown, but some do. You know, you can go that far with it. And that's part of one of the things that craft, you know, people talk about craft liquor. Craft doesn't really mean anything, which is unfortunate. So there's no legal definition. So like Tito's, you know, says handmade on the bottle, that sort of thing. Like there's no legal definition behind handmade.
Gotcha. Is Tito's handmade?
Handcrafted,
in your opinion? Expert opinion?
I don't know if I would present my opinion on but I would say no. But then again, there is no legal definition.
Yeah,
so it's the same with craft.
You want on there.
Yeah, exactly. So cool. Some people think that craft spirits is defined by how much you make, like how many bottles you fill. Some people think it's the process. I'm more on the side of the process.
Yeah.
Because to me, when you're crafting something, you're manipulating and creating you know, raw materials into something else.
Yeah.
So like, you know, does a guy build furniture if he goes to IKEA and builds furniture that he bought from IKEA? Or is the guy,
is he
a craft furniture builder?
I wouldn't call him a carpenter, no.
You know what I'm saying? Versus the guy that like cut down a tree, planked it out, you know, put it together. So that's kind of, I guess, an analogy, but yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, the distillation process, so basically you're taking beer and you're distilling it. And the distillation process, you're separating out the different chemical compounds according to temperature and time and flavor and all these things. And you're smelling it, tasting it during that distillation process, and you're selecting which chemical compounds you want to be in the final product. So as you go, you could get really detailed scientific on it and figure out what all the specific chemical compounds are.
Yeah.
Or with practice, you can develop a palate that you can recognize certain things that are desirable and undesirable.
Right.
But the distillation process, the beginning is the heads. That's where like the methanol and, you know, really acetone type flavors and nasty stuff is. The don't drink this, you'll go blind stuff.
Yeah, like the Smirnoff
kind of. Yeah. that's where the rough stuff is, the like undrinkable. Yeah. So it is kind of dangerous. You could poison people if you don't know what you're doing.
Right. Which is probably why distillation is illegal to do it at home.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I think it's more of a control thing, you know, with especially in our state, but in our country in general.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at Europe, like if your family owns an orchard, then your family also makes apple brandy, you know, and, you know, makes cider and makes all the stuff because you're utilizing what you have.
Yeah.
So, and then you get good at it and you're proud of it. So, you know, here it's just a different culture, which is kind of unfortunate. You know, I don't know if it'd be better or worse for me as a distiller if everyone was distilling.
Right.
You know, but the point is, you know, it is illegal. and don't do it in your garage because if you get caught, it's they're mean about it. So
yeah.
So you got the heads, and then there's tails as well, right?
Yeah, so there's the hearts after the heads. Hearts? That's the good stuff. Okay. And then there's the tails. That's when it starts to get watery. You start to get some undesirable flavors in there.
So what do you do with the heads and tails? Like, do you just...
So I throw it out. Most distillers will collect the heads and tails together. That's called the faints. And they'll put it in the next batch. Because it's alcohol. So okay. you're basically... So part of our process... And our reasoning is we only want the good stuff in there every batch. Every batch is just the good stuff. We don't, you know, we don't, we try to be really picky about what cuts make it into the product.
Quality.
So, yeah. So we, and it, that's part of, you know, it's an expense because you're not utilizing every drop of alcohol. So,
So they're like, oh yeah, this stuff is pretty shitty. We're not going to put it in this batch, but we'll put it in the next one.
Yeah, well, I mean, it gets distilled down, so it's not so like it's that it's stuff still gets that, but
thrown into the pre-distilled liquids.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, it gets cleaned out again. It's not like it gets put into finished product. I hope not. Anyways,
yeah.
But it does. It is a way to conserve the alcohol and get a few more pennies out of each batch.
Right? Could you make like hand sanitizer out of that? Like, what's is, would there be a use for it?
If you the hand sanitizer thing is a whole. Can of worms, but the FDA has a specific recipe you're supposed to follow.
Oh.
You're supposed to get licensed to do it because it's a topical thing. Like,
yeah,
I'm licensed to make liquor.
Yeah,
I'm not licensed to make medicine. I'm not licensed to make a topical ointment or you know any of that. So, you know, which is part of why we steered clear of the hand sanitizer thing. You know, plus a lot of guys had already stepped up by the time you know we were. By the time it was asked of us.
Yeah.
So there was enough people doing it that we could go, oh, you know, ask these guys, they're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Interesting. That's cool. And then I was going to ask about your stills. Is there a difference between copper stills and stainless steel stills?
Yeah. So copper is used in the distillation process to pull the sulfites out of the liquid or the vapor. Because what matters really is that the copper is in contact with the vapor part of the process. So like our stills are stainless steel, but you know, one has the copper onion on the top, whiskey onion is what a lot of people call it. And then the other one has copper plates and copper, you know, there's copper inside of it. So even though the outside's all stainless, it has on the copper inside.
Is that where cocktail onions come from?
I have no idea.
That was just dumb. I hear a lot about like reading into different distilleries and like the way they make their spirits. Like Jameson, for example, uses a traditional Irish pot still.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does the shape of the still affect things significantly, or is that just a fucking gimmick that they're selling to people who don't know shit about distilling? Because I assume that some of that, at least 50% of it, is just bullshit. Like who, like handcrafted.
That's one of the things that's hard about this industry. There is a lot of bullshit, and it's hard to weed through a lot of it. Honestly. You know, ultimately, what matters most is it good? Do I like it?
Yeah.
You know, do I feel like crap after I drink this, or do I feel good after drinking this? Like,
yeah.
Pretty natural things there, but there's all these nuances and all these variables and marketing that can be done with all that's of it. So.
Like maybe I'm sure they're using you know traditional Irish pot stills, but like I don't know if that affects the finished product. It sure sounds good as a marketing thing though. So like if that sells your liquor, like
your sure. equipment does definitely matter. And there are different shapes and different styles of stills to be used for different things that will generate different products. A lot of it lies on the shoulders of the distiller and the decisions they make with the mash, the decisions they make with the cuts, you know, temperatures and times, all of those things come into play. So there's a lot of variables to manipulate, which is why I like it.
Yeah.
And it's a mix of math, science, art, you know, and drinking. So.
It seems like as complicated as beer is to make, like beer is fucking simple. You know, you got four ingredients, water, barley, hops and yeast. So like four ingredients, simple. Mm-hmm. Like it's so complicated the way you mix them together. Distillation seems like taking beer and then just like to a whole new level of fucking complicated.
Yeah, because you got to know your temperature. Because why I was saying, you know, the 123 proof?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a specific number. It's because you've worked on... where to get that and that right proof, that right temperatures of we got to use the right water. Yeah. I mean, does it really matter? Like what for in beer, water is very important. Is mm-hmm. isn't that important in distilling? Because you're still heating it up and like vaporizing it in a way, right?
Yeah, yeah. Water is extremely important in distilling as well.
Okay.
In some respects, just as important. In some respects, more. When you, for example, a bottle of vodka is 40% alcohol. So what's the rest of it?
Water.
Water. So if you use disgusting water, you're going to have disgusting vodka.
Gotcha.
So I'm a big believer of good in, good out.
Yeah.
And from every little step of the way.
Yeah.
Do you mess with your water composition? Like his meat needs more.
You have an RO system, right?
We have an RO system, and that ensures that our water is consistent, and that it's just water and it's not manipulating the flavors at all. So that's a very important thing in distillation and spirits is the water for sure.
Interesting. I know a lot of brewers play with like salts and stuff like that in their water. Like do you ever do that kind of stuff?
I've done some of that, but I usually try and steer clear of it and just use RO because RO is the purest form of water you can really have.
Yeah.
And
that's the good in that you're talking
about. That's the good in. I want a blank canvas from the water. I want to taste the rest of the process.
Yeah, that's
the
really
water's
cool.
not part of. And that's the
artist in you is you taking that blank canvas and then you manipulate it how you want to come out as a finished product.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah.
It's
so
really cool.
So our focus is more on the distillation.
Yeah.
Than the water.
You said you worked at Dented Brick?
Yeah.
They use well water, right?
Yes. So I helped start Dented Brick. That's after I left Portland. So I left Portland to help start Dented Brick.
Cool.
And that's part of why they chose that property. Had its own well, so they use their own well water. So that's another example. So if we had a well, we would probably use our well water as well. But instead, we don't have a well. We have city water, or we can manipulate the water. So the way we do it is we use RO.
Yeah.
But the reason, there's multiple reasons for that. But the main reason is that we can be consistent with RO.
Yeah.
So if we change buildings, we can still have an RO system.
You still have that system in place.
Yeah, so we can still use the same, the water will have the same effect on the product no matter where the distillery is because we'll always use an RO system.
Interesting.
So going to the distillery, I saw a bunch of barrels.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been doing some, you haven't released anything barrel-wise, but—
Not yet.
You're working on a barrel program or working on putting some of these liquors specifically in a barrel?
So right now we do have some of the Bosun's Gin in a barrel.
Ooh.
That's coming along nicely, and that'll probably be one of our next releases.
Oh, is that like what do they call barrel age? Is that like Old Tom or something like that?
Yeah.
Does that, Old Tom, is it just barrel aged, or does it have to be made specifically with a certain type of malt or something like that as well?
No, so Old Tom gin is, if I've got my story straight, then it's because when gin was really popular, and it got so popular with the rich people that it got popular with the poor people. And the rich people got mad that the poor people liked gin. So they made it illegal.
Same way with tennis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you have to wear all white
to
play tennis.
You make rules.
We don't have white. We're poor.
Yeah, you make rules.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. So it's out of interest of segregating the classes. So to get past that, you would have a barrel of gin in the back of a restaurant or a bar or something. And there in the back alley, you would go and there would be a little slot to put a coin and a spout to pour into your cup.
Oh, really?
So
nice.
That's where Old Tom gin came from. And the Tom part is because the spout would often be a cat face or like a cat's mouth.
I want to look this up.
So
speaking of gin.
Yeah, I'll take some.
Say when.
I will take a small pour, please. Half of what, Ethan? I'm not a man like Ethan. I have zero chest hair.
Ethan, do you have chest hair?
I have a little bit of chest hair.
See,
yeah. I'm not a real hairy guy. I know that photo I showed you says otherwise.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, Ethan used to have long hair and a big ass beard. Looks like a Viking, if you will.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah,
I think you should bring it back. You should bring the long hair back.
Maybe I will. Yeah.
Why not?
I've got some of that Viking blood in me.
You should, dude. Just rock it. Yeah. Bring it back. You'd be a distiller with like a man bun distiller. That'd be badass. I'm okay with that.
I've done that.
So they were wooden plaques shaped like black cats. Wow. An Old Tom mounted on the outside wall of some pubs above a public walkway in the 18th century England. Wow. That's super interesting. I got to find a picture of these cats now. But
it was a poor people gin, and then it became popular because they're like, oh, this actually tastes pretty good. And then what? The rich people start drinking Old Tom Gin and
check that out.
Well, just so with barrels, barrel aging is something that, you know, at least from my understanding of the history, it came about as an accident. So basically, in the day, barrels were like the Tupperware.
Yeah,
that's what you stored stuff in. That was the packaging. So if it's liquid, you put it in a barrel. You know, powders, barrel, fish, barrel. You know, barrels were just used to store and ship all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So barrel aging was something that came about, like, we've been storing this for a while, and now it's brown.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like,
it didn't look like it.
Right. It's dirty now.
Like with whiskey, so whiskey barrels are burnt on the inside.
Yeah.
And that came about because you'd have a barrel, someone just shipped you fish in that barrel, mm-hmm. you burn the inside so that whatever you put in it next doesn't taste like fish.
Yeah. Fishy shochu.
I was about to say, I'll bet there's like some sort of Icelandic liqueur that's like...
fish.
It's like a spirit put in a barrel that had fish in it.
Yeah, yeah. There's Icelandic. There's like fish-flavored vodka and stuff. There's
that sounds terrible.
It's a crazy
I'll
world.
Try anything
it's from Iceland,
though.
Yeah. For sure it's from Iceland, right?
Speaking of those places, have you been traveling the world to get certain spirits to kind of perfect your craft?
You know, not a lot, not as much as I'd like to. But you know, I've been to Japan, was there for a little while, doing a geological coring expedition.
Geological coring? Where does that come about?
So I was looking for a job in the meantime while we were working on Holy Stone. And, I found a company that, does geological coring.
That's super rad.
And I was like, that sounds interesting. I'll apply. And they gave me the job, which was cool. And I learned a lot and got to go to Japan and live on a ship for a little while. And, you know.
Did that help marry the idea of shochu?
Yeah, for sure. So that was a good way to progress that idea was kind of, you know, a pretty casual idea. But then when I was in Japan, that like helped cement it because I drank a lot of shochu, a lot of different kinds of shochus. Yeah. And all over Japan, and I was introducing my coworkers to it, and they're
that's
like, "What is that?" And you know,
like, here, drink some, weird.
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah. So I was
delicious.
Like, "We're not working, so we're drinking." That was kind of
my man.
So, which was hard on the ship because there's no booze on the ship. But when we weren't on the ship,
party time,
it was good. Yeah.
Is there anywhere in the world that has like a liquor you just want to try or need to try or just have to try? I don't know. Like, does India have one or Thailand or Russia?
I've,
you just got to try their vodka or
I've
something.
Tried booze from. Everywhere. Anytime I've had a friend that goes somewhere, I'm like, hey, get me
this.
What are they drinking, like that? Azerbaijan?
What the fuck is that? I have no idea.
It's
sound like a mustard.
It's a country in like, you call it like Eastern Europe or like Middle East, kind of like north of like Syria. Near, I want to say near the Black Sea. But they drink fermented camel milk. That's like their
That is something I do want to try. I haven't tried.
Yeah. I assume it's like kefir.
I don't know.
My guess.
Yeah, I don't know how. I don't know what it's like, but yeah, that is something I do want to try that I haven't tried. But there's
camel
some
milk.
Pretty interesting booze out there for sure. So,
damn.
And
what's Mike
is a pilot,
yeah,
and so
he's
all
everywhere.
Over the place. And so
he's probably picking you up bottles
often,
left and right.
Yeah, I will often ask him to
keep
his eye out for certain things, and sometimes he finds something.
I got a chirp in Mike's ear. Like, hey, make it two.
he did bring me some shochu that was pretty awesome and unique, and you know, some of the shochu, everything Japanese is done right, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, their chicken nuggets at their 7-Eleven is better than any fried chicken you can get in Utah.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
Are there great
chicken nuggets? Right. Yeah, in quotation marks. And I'm like, that's like really good fried chicken.
It's the best chicken nugget ever.
Like, why are you eating this garbage food?
I can taste the nugget. I gotcha.
Yeah.
So then, why just pour us?
Chickens don't have nuggets.
Why just pour us the gin? Gin. So tell us about the gin. The Bosun's gin.
So the gin, it's the first Navy strength gin made in Utah. Navy strength gin is something that I fell in love with in Portland because there's a lot of Navy strength gins up there. And it's a higher proof gin. So Navy strength came from, there was gin rations that they would provide in the Navy. And it had to be a certain percentage of alcohol so that they could pour it on black powder and light it on fire.
Hell yeah.
If that didn't work, then someone was pilfering from the stash and watering it down, or someone was ripping somebody off.
Gotcha.
So that was a way of proofing it. So like the whole 100 proof, you know, that there are many ways to proof alcohol. But really what that means is the alcohol percentage times two. is the proof. But pouring it over black powder and lighting it on fire is one of the ways to prove it.
I think we asked Mike this question, but have you guys poured it over black powder and lit?
I did it in my kitchen, yes. I have.
Oh, shit.
It.
And did it go?
It did.
Oh, my God. That would I want to see that.
Such a cool.
I want to see that. Can we make that happen?
Like we talked about Instagram a little bit before this. That would be a sweet Instagram.
Can we come over and just that Instagram?
Like Holy Stone
proof
Distilling.
This is Holy Stones.
Sure. Light it on fire.
Yeah. I'm hitting
like a trail
this.
Of gunpowder.
Yeah.
And then you just like walk by with a bottle of gin
Let's
and
do
light
it.
It all up.
This is a great idea. We're making it happen.
I'm down.
And then you zoom out. You got a drone, you zoom out, and it spells Holy Stone.
Oh, okay. That's a lot, maybe. But I do like the idea. Yeah, we'll make Badass. Something happen after this. I like that. So this gin, you were telling me about the juniper berries in here.
Yeah.
So you're not going to go up into, this is what Mike told me first, but you're not going to go up into the Uinta Mountains and grab junipers here.
No.
Why not?
I mean, you could.
But you don't.
But from my experience, they don't taste very good.
Why is that? They're just shitty?
Yeah, they're just not good for gin, at least so far. All of my efforts with Utah juniper, I haven't been happy with the flavor from the juniper berries. So, I mean, maybe we'll tread down that road again and give it a whirl, but it's kind of hard to do with those juniper berries. They're just not great gin berries.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
And so, I mean, you nailed this one. Is this one locally, these juniper berries?
Or no, these juniper berries are from Eastern Europe.
Oh, damn. They're
Azerbaijan?
Again with the mustard. I don't understand.
It's probably Kazakhstan.
They're usually like Romanian or, you know, that area.
Yugoslavian or something like that.
Usually it's Romania. Yeah. But yeah, we use all organic, high quality botanicals for all of our products. So that's one of the things that's very important is using high quality, like I said, good in, good out. So, so these are all botanicals that I've kind of vetted over time and used. You know, sometimes in multiple products, and sometimes, you know, I just try it out and try a few different ones and pick the best one. So
how do you put juniper in it? Are you putting it in the mash? Are you doing it, you know, afterwards? You're just steeping them? For those who don't know,
we do vapor extraction for all of our gins. And the reason we do that is because, one, it's what I like best. That's the main thing. But two, it gives me a lot of control over how much of the oils and flavors come from the botanicals in the final product. So instead of having it, you know, sitting in the liquid, it's suspended above the liquid in the still, and the vapors are going through the botanicals and extracting those oils and flavors and imparting it into the liquor.
Interesting. So would it make it a huge difference if you're like steep it, put it in the liquid itself?
Yeah.
Damn, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And part of that is, you know, you have organic matter that's sitting in alcohol. So the time matters that it's sitting in that alcohol. Whereas with the vapor, you know, I have more control over, I turn it on and it starts, you know, versus, oh, I left it 2 hours longer in there. It's good. It might be a little different. Maybe not, you know? So it depends on the botanicals too. So, but yeah, vapor extraction for me provides a cleaner, crisper flavor, and I'm able to focus in on the botanicals more than if I'm just mixing them up and putting them in the liquid. Plus, it seems to be a cleaner.
I mean, it's fresh
more
as can be.
Flavor.
This is super.
This
fresh.
Is the first thing I think you tried, Wyatt, when Mike and Barbie here, and you just
dude, this is funky
died.
Fresh.
Yeah.
This is like the fresh prince of all booze.
Fresh pinch of gin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking fantastic gin. Really, though, like all of these spirits are the best spirits in their class that I've tried. Like the gin is the best gin. The vodka is by far the best vodka.
And not because you are here sitting in front of us, Ethan. It's because we've actually given it to a bunch of people and they have all said, where the fuck did you get this?
Yeah.
It's called Holy Stone. I'll show you.
Cool.
I mean, you're making some quality products, brother.
Thanks.
Really are.
I mean,
I don't have
absinthe.
A ton of experience with absinthe, but your absinthe is fucking good.
Yeah, absinthe.
I don't
great.
Have any experience with shoshu, but your shoshu is fucking good.
Yeah, I want to mix that with everything.
I've drank my fair share of gin and a little bit of vodka. I've never liked vodka.
Mm-hmm.
This is why your vodka stands out to me, is I like it. I've never liked a vodka before, but I really like your vodka and I really like your gin. Like to the point where like usually like a martini is one of my favorite drinks.
Yeah.
If you make it right, don't put fucking olives in your martini, you fucking dunces out there.
Hey, jeez. I like olives in my martini.
Dude, it's not a martini. As soon as you put olives in your martini, it's not a martini anymore. It's a fucking dirty martini.
Oh, man,
martini.
I like it dirty.
I like it dirty.
Then have your dirty martinis.
I like
but
dirty.
Like, when you come
like
up to the bar and order a martini, Like, don't be surprised when there's lemon peel in it and not fucking olives, because it's a martini.
Be specific.
Exactly. Yeah. Be fucking specific. And people are like, yeah, I'll have a martini with, I don't know, maybe Grey Goose. I'm like, that's not a martini. It's a fucking vodka martini.
To me, the difference between a martini and a dirty martini is like an old fashioned and a Manhattan. They're just not the same cocktail.
Yeah, they're just not the same. That's exactly it. And the vodka martini is the same.
Yeah.
They're both delicious.
Just a different thing.
A different cocktail. Yeah.
Or like, if you put too much vermouth in a martini, that's one of my pet peeves. Mistake.
So, oh, man.
You
got to
do it like the Winston Churchill style, right? It's like when Winston Churchill laid out the greatest recipe for a martini. Yeah. You do 2 fingers of gin. You take your vermouth. You put it in your shaker with the ice. You shake it, and then you pour it out. And then you add your gin, and you stir it, and you pour it in a glass. Yeah.
That's how I'd make it. I put the vermouth in the glass, stir it in the glass, dump that, and then...
See, that leaves too much vermouth.
I flip it. I do like a flip that vermouth out of there.
Try shaking it over the ice, and then pouring out all the liquid that comes out, because you just get a tiny, tiny bit.
Just God
a
hint.
Fucking Winnie.
God, Winnie.
Yeah.
All right, so when are we going to see whiskey or rum out of you guys?
It's probably going to be a while, especially for whiskey. So we are... we are focused on malt whiskeys, and we are not going to be using small barrels. We're going to be making it completely from scratch using regular size barrels.
Cool.
And it's going to be worth the wait, but it's going to be a wait.
Going to be fish barrels, or what's your plan there?
No. So we'll probably mix it up. Some American oak. We have some old High West barrels that we might use for. That's what the gin is in right now. But yeah, we'll mix it up a bit and see what takes. And as far as your question earlier about malted barley and like smoked malt, we're going to do a variety. So we'll have super smoky malt whiskey and not smoky at all, super sweet malt whiskey and everything in between. So, but it's going to be years before that takes place.
Oh, I'm
so
excited.
What's your plan for the smoked malt? And like, obviously, you know, if it's years down the road, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you may have started it, and it's already in fucking barrels. It's still probably years down the road. Because, like, okay, a different side thing. I'll get to that later. I'm trying to contain myself here, all the excitement. I fucking love smoky scotch. I really do.
Me too.
Lagavulin is probably my favorite liquid on this planet. And, like, I mean, obviously, they use peat that they get near their distillery from, you know, Islay, which is just west of Scotland. Mm-hmm. Like, what's your plan for the smoked? I mean, obviously, you're probably not, you know, a maltster. You're not malting yourself. But where are you planning on getting the malt? And, like, how are you going to get the flavors of smoke? Because the peat smoke has a very, very particular, almost like, I get peanut butter. A lot of people say, like, burnt tire. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I always get peanut
Band-aids,
butter. But, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Which sounds gross, but, like, fuck, to me, it tastes like peanut butter. Like, not exactly like peanut butter, but that's what kind of, it's like, oh, it's so good. So good. What's your plan? Because I imagine that different smokes add different flavors. Like, if...
Yeah. So, we get all of our malt from Solstice Malt, which is a local maltster.
Shout out to James Weed.
Yeah. So, James is awesome, and he does a lot of experimentation he even has a Utah peat that he has peated some.
We
malt
had him
with.
Come on the episode boner. Not so long ago.
Yeah.
And he goes up in the Uintas and gets 4 cubic feet of the peat.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So we have him supplying some of our malt, and then we also have Mountain Malt out of Idaho is the other supplier for our malt.
Cool.
And so those are the two that we're focused on. James is a great partner because of the unique malts that he's coming out with and stuff. Yeah. So, and we, you know, whiskey's kind of been on the back burner. We've been open for a year and a half, a little more than that. And, you know, we have 5 products out. That's a lot to do in a year and a half. So this year we'll be focused on putting whiskey into barrels.
Yeah.
You know, we have apple brandy that I'm got a bunch of Mountain West cider that we've distilled into apple brandy.
Sweet.
So most of that's going to go into barrels and be released in when it's ready, a couple of years probably.
That's awesome.
So it'll be a Calvados style brandy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll see what else we come up with, but
yeah, you know. Brandy should be drank from a warm glass too, correct?
If you want, I don't know.
I think that's the traditional way.
Don't ask us. We like olives in our martinis, so I don't know what you drink.
I think you're just confused. I think you're talking about a dirty martini. It's a different cocktail.
Gotcha.
I'm pretty sure brandy is traditionally like you heat the glass up with, I think the traditional way is warm water. Like you... Like, God, I'm probably fucking wrong here, but like they would put a tea kettle on the stove, and when the tea kettle gets warm, they would let it cool for a couple minutes and then pour it over the glass to make the glass warm, and then they would pour their brandy in the warm glass. Something about it like supposed to bring out flavors.
I haven't heard of that, but I don't know everything.
I'm probably fucking wrong.
And I mean, for me, that's part of what I love about this industry, though, is there's deep history and tradition behind every single type of product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, there are methods, there are like ceremonies behind every type of booze. Yeah. But ultimately for me, like, you know, if you like it, drink it however you want.
Sure, yeah.
You know, there's
yeah.
no wrong way to drink it.
Yeah. That's
you know,
true.
Unless you do it too much, then, right. you know, make a fool of yourself.
You can drink it however you want, your way. Because yeah. I'm a firm believer on Mexican cerveza should be with a lime at all times. But mm-hmm. some people don't like lime and don't want that. And yeah. I think Hefeweizen should never be served with an orange, but some people confusing, so you know, it's like whatever.
Well, I think they're depends confusing it with a different style.
Yeah, probably.
That's what it comes down to. It's just like confusing a martini with a dirty martini. They're yeah. saying I want a orange with my hef, and it's like that's a different type of wheat yeah. beer. That's an American wheat
and
beer.
I think it's just, you know, if you like it that way, go for it. But if you want to be yeah. go back to the roots of it, because that's what like going back to James is going the traditional route of being a maltster.
Yeah,
and he's just doing it the old school way, and then you guys are doing quality products, so it just makes sense to have someone that's doing it traditionally,
mm-hmm.
old school, and then do your take on it, and then your customers can do whatever they want with it.
Yeah.
Because exactly. I see your gins are going, all your products going out in cocktails across the state.
Yeah.
And everyone's making these bomb ass, especially with the purple gin,
mm-hmm.
which is the prettiest gin, it's prettiest liquor, I think, on the market.
Yeah.
It is just the most gorgeous. Tell us a little bit about the gin. How do you say that one?
Cerulea.
Cerulea?
Yeah. So the Cerulea is, you know, it's a really important product. Barbie, you know, she's the, Cerulea is the brainchild of Barbie for sure. And she's kind of led that. And it is to benefit breast cancer, bring awareness to breast cancer survivors. And to, you know, we're going to raise money for breast cancer research.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Barbie lost her mother to breast cancer. They also lost a friend last year to breast cancer as well. You know, I have a few friends that have battled breast cancer. Some that still are, some that, you know, have passed on from it. So, you know, most people have some connection with somebody
yeah.
who is either dealing with fighting or has survived breast cancer. Yeah. So that's a big part of that product. And for us, you know, Cerulea, one, it's the color. Two, there's a butterfly in the bottle because it embodies transformation and strength and, you know, breast cancer turns a lot of people into warriors. And
yeah.
So that's part of it
for
is,
sure.
you know, so it's a survival story. It's a tribute to strong women that have fought breast cancer and families that have dealt with it. And yeah, so it's an issue that's really close to the heart for
Holy
us
Stone,
as
yeah.
as the Holy Stone family. And so that's the meaning behind all of it for
that's
sure.
That's super cool. And so. And why the purple color? I mean, tell us a little bit about the butterfly pea blossom.
Yeah, so we infuse it post-distillation with the butterfly pea blossom, and that's how it gets that nice purpley-blue color, and that's part of the transformation. So that liquor, the Cerulea gin, will change color depending on what you mix it with. So it's really fun to use in cocktails.
We should have brought some lemon or something.
Yeah, it's really fun, actually.
Yeah, no, it's really fun to play with. You know, it's been kind of interesting to like, I wonder what'll happen if I mix it with this.
And, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I'm not a bartender for sure, but I do make my own cocktails at home, and it's been a blast playing with it and, you know, turning it white or
it's one of my favorite party favors. It really is.
Bright red, you yeah. know. You put some bitters in there, and it turns this like nice ruby red color. Yeah, there's just... It's fun to play with.
Yeah.
So.
And I love just going, and you can go back and forth with it because I love pouring it out and then showing everyone, watch this, and then check it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
What yeah. should we toast to?
You tell us, Ethan.
I don't know.
To breast cancer.
To breast cancer
survivors.
Survivors.
There you go. I like
those
that.
Those who died, those who live on.
Yeah. We're fighting the battle. Barbie's mom for sure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Yeah, so this is a very floral gin.
Yeah, I was going to say way more.
Yeah,
way
more. Usually I steer clear of floral. A lot of gins end up tasting like perfume.
Yeah.
Don't want that. But this has, you know, kind of a good lavender punch at the beginning.
Hard lavender.
And then it kind of morphs into like a candied flower, you know,
candied
some sweetness and some vanilla. You know, it kind of mellows as it sits on your palate. So that's one of the things I love about it.
Yeah.
The nose is very lavender too, and the lavender scent is I have not met one person that's like, I hate the way lavender smells. Like
right.
Mm-hmm. You know. Yeah. So it's great.
This would be a great nightcap.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a good mellow scent.
Yeah.
You know, lavender's kind of a calming scent.
Yeah. You tranquility.
Know? Yeah.
And when you drink it, it's that transformation on your palate. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, just kind of plays different levels of that sweetness, and then kind of just, it's a nice lingering on your tongue, and I like that palate feel.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, and for me, making liquor as a distiller, mouthfeel is incredibly important, mm-hmm. and one of the things that I just enjoy about spirits is that flavor roller coaster that it's taking you on.
Oh, yeah.
So for me, like, I drink spirits straight
quite
often, you know, and I'm a distiller, so I know that's probably rare, but, you know, I don't usually mix it much, or if I do, I make a really simple cocktail with way more booze than most people, but, you know, like that's martini. What's important. So with like the Cerealia, especially, that's when I felt really good about the recipe. We played with a bunch of different botanicals and different flowers and all these different things and kind of mixed them around, me and Mike and Barbie. And this was the combination of all of our favorite flavors from what we played with. And it just works really well because it is kind of like a lingering, morphing flavor.
Yeah.
It's a flavor roller coaster.
It's beautiful, and it's just pretty, and it's overall, it's just awesome. I'm glad you guys are continuing to release it. Cause mm-hmm. At first, I thought it was like a one-time release, and I remember coming over, and I'm like, you guys got to keep going with this, and you guys are. It seems
We weren't really sure of what sort of reception we'd get for it, you know, especially being when we opened right before COVID and everything, you know, and when we first opened, nobody knew who we were.
Yeah.
You know, so our first couple products, really slow releases, you know, really calm, pretty chill. This one was a hit day one. You know, we sold out of the first batch the first weekend, and then I made another batch, and then we sold out of that batch the next weekend.
Good. I'm
so
glad.
I made another batch. So, and I'm making another batch right now.
Oh,
you know,
hell
so we.
Yeah.
About how long does it take to make a batch start to finish?
So with the gins, it's. With the Cerealia, it's a couple days of distillation, a couple days of infusion, and then it's done.
Yeah.
So, infusion, yeah. Yeah, so post-distillation, so that's where it gets its color. So that takes a couple days. The distillation itself takes a couple days. We're using the same organic wheat base for the Cerealia as we do the Bosun's Navy Strength Gin. So, and that's the other thing with the base liquor, that matters. You want to use high quality, you know, what's available. Like with the vodka, we use the grappa, you know. So we're trying to make sure we use good stuff.
Grappa
so.
For vodka.
Oh, yeah. That's Mike was telling us that. That was genius.
Yeah, sure. that's honestly, that was based on flavor.
Oh, gotcha.
So we had a bunch of different options that we could go with. And, you know, I kind of, from the beginning, thought it would be cool to do great base, but I wasn't sure how it would turn out because I hadn't done it before. But then we tasted all these different options, and that was the clear favorite for sure. And it just gives us gives us something unique.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't want to just make another vodka.
Yeah.
We wanted to have its own personality and its own kind of hint of flavor, you know, in the background.
Yeah.
So,
dude, it's incredible. Like, I've never had a vodka that I enjoy, and I see that vodka, and it fucking surprises me that I'm like. I see the vodka and I'm like, yeah, I'd have a glass of, like, just a glass of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, vodka, in my experience, it's like something you want to mix because you don't want to drink. And usually you mix it and like the goal of vodka, I've never had vodka that, like, I want to drink because it tastes good. When I drink spirits, and same reason I drink beer, like, I don't want to get fucked up. I drink it because it fucking tastes good.
Yeah.
And I want to enjoy that flavor. Like, it's the same reason I drink coffee. It's not because I need some, like, caffeine hit. It's because I fucking enjoy the flavor of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I've never had a vodka that I've wanted to drink because they've all been, like, meh, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, if I wanted to get fucked up, then, yeah, I'd mix with soda water and some lime and I'd get mm-hmm. go get schmammied. But, like, dude, your vodka, like, I just want to pour a glass of your vodka and sip on it.
Do it.
It just fucking blows my mind.
Do it.
Do it.
No, and that's one of the things too that, like, so we do make luxury spirits, and, you know, liquor is something to be savored and enjoyed. If you want to get fucked up, go ahead, get fucked up. That's fine. That's your prerogative. but you're putting something into your body, you know? So it's like, am I going to eat, the McWhatever I'm going to eat? Or, what am I going to put into my body? Yeah. You know, usually you should lean towards something high quality. You understand what's in it.
Yeah.
You know, you enjoy every step of the way. You should enjoy buying it. You should enjoy looking at it. You should enjoy tasting it. So it's really an experience.
Dude, yeah. Beautiful bottles too. I mean, like everything about
the Art Deco labels, everything. Fantastic. Zulu Bravo, Bravo Zulu, excuse me, all of it.
Bravo Zulu.
Yeah. Really, really cool. I had a question for you about those who want to become distillers. What is your advice for those individuals?
My advice is get a job at a distillery. There's a lot of hobby distillers out there and people that, start distilleries with zero experience as distillers. It kind of blows my mind. and there's a lot of people end up doing really well, which is great. But there's a learning curve to being a distiller. And that's part of why I approached it the way I did. When I was at High West, I wanted to have my own distillery. I was doing it partially to learn and to make whiskey because I like whiskey. But ultimately, in the back of my head, I'm like, how am I going to do this myself? And if you want to become a distiller, one, start studying. You know, homebrewing beer is a good place to start. Read, there's a million books. I have way too many books at home. But they're all fun to read.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're geeky enough. But you need to learn chemistry. There's a lot of safety involved. There's a lot of things to consider. But my suggestion is go get a job at a distillery.
Yeah,
learn. Even if you're on the bottling line and learn, ask a distiller what books to read. You know, there's tons of material out there. Awesome. And the internet, you know, is a good resource for lots of stuff.
It seems like OJT is the best way to learn for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you want to find a distiller that does things that you enjoy.
Yeah.
And learn from them if you can. And it's like becoming a tattoo artist. Like, you can draw really well. That's great. That's a good place to start. You know, you have a good palette. Great place to start.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be a good tattoo artist or a good distiller until you've practiced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think tattoo is a great analogy. Like, you can draw on flat paper. Good job. Now what do you do when there's like a fucking nipple in your way?
Skinny. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The skin. The body.
Skin that moves and there's like
malleable surface.
You have a vibrating machine that's your pen. Yeah. That's just different.
Or like putting something across someone's knee or elbow. Like, it's a completely different.
Yeah.
Completely different thing.
So Ethan, you started something called the Distillers Guild of Utah, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that for those who don't. No.
Well, that actually has folded, basically. So,
Sorry,
I mean,
to bring it up.
Yeah, my bad.
It's okay. So that was me and Mark started that at Den & Brick, and we were trying to help the industry locally and get everyone to work together for the common good of the industry. I'm an eccentric person. distillers and brewers are. So there was a lot of discord between the distillers that came along with that, which was unfortunate, and just different business models, clashing business models, different opinions about how things should be done. So, I mean, the guild is all but folded. We haven't done anything in a long time.
Any chance for a rebirth?
I mean, there's a chance. There's been some talk among some of the distillers about doing something together. But it's just really hard to get everyone on the same page in some regards. So, when it comes to the DABC and legal stuff, we're all on the same page mostly, which is probably the most important part in this market. Mm. So we are taking efforts together. We do work together on stuff like that. We just don't do it as a guild.
Gotcha.
So we're doing it as individual companies working together. So we do work together all the time. We share resources sometimes.
Yeah.
But the guild isn't really an organization that's doing anything at all at the moment. So, which is unfortunate, but is what it is.
Yeah. So, I wonder if there's some sort of way to like piggyback off the Brewers Guild.
Well, that's what I was going to ask on that one is you see a lot of breweries, like a lot of our friends that are brewers will go and like just everyone just gathers at Fisher Brewing or like a TF.
It's always Fisher. You want to meet a brewer? Just go hang out at Fisher. And like that's the thing.
Brewers usually kind of talk about brewers and instead of the community we were in is like, it's not really a bashing on your product or bashing on someone else's product. Usually it's more like a, hey, like, let's talk about this new fad or this new trend in the brewing world. Or let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Do you guys kind of do the same thing with just distilling, where a bunch of distillers kind of like meet together at Holy Stone and like, or you guys meet at a certain location, or do you have like that kind of camaraderie when it comes to,
you know, Fisher Beer?
Not,
you guys all go to Fisher
really.
Beer too.
I mean, at least, if that is happening, I don't get invited anymore. I don't know. No, I don't think there's that kind of level of it. You know, we have like group text conversations and group emails about stuff, but most of our focus, cause it may sound weird, but distilleries are incredibly more discriminated against than breweries are in the Utah legal system.
Dude, that sucks. Cause
so our rules are different than breweries. Whoa. Very different. So that's one of the big things, is like, it's hard to get into that part of it. One, when there's not as many distilleries around, and two, our focus is just trying to stay afloat in a market that strangles the industry.
Damn.
Yeah. So
what can the common folk do to help change that?
Buy local.
Damn.
Buy local. And do your research. So, I mean, On a bottle, if it says distilled and bottled by, then that distillery distilled it. Or they're lying.
Yeah.
But that's generally the way you can tell if something's actually made locally. But just buy from local businesses. You know, we do have, out of the distilleries we have, I'd say we have a pretty good ratio of good product being made. That's not always the case in other states. There are other states that have way more distilleries than us, but they also have a lot of crummy product made by some of the smaller distilleries.
That's unfortunate.
So I'd say we're pretty spoiled with the quality that we're getting out of our local industry. And, you know, as we grow, you can now stock your whole bar with just local stuff and cover almost all the bases.
Yeah.
You know, from really good liqueurs and you know, things to mix with, mixers, to your core products, your core liquors. So buy local, communicate to the DABC and your representatives, tell them you want local product on the shelf, vote with your dollar for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, go to the liquor store, tell them what you want.
I like
tell
that.
Them.
That was
a big thing
a
that Mike was talking about, was like, go to the liquor store. And if enough people go to the liquor store and say, Hey,
Holy Stone Shochu.
I want Holy Stone Shochu. I want Holy Stone's gin.
Yeah, they're absinthe. Yeah.
Yeah. If they get like a certain number of requests, they'll bring it on the shelves. And so if enough people
kind of force their hand in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, like, it's like you said, they operate half as a, you know, a state run service and half as a business trying to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I mean, if they're a business that wants to make money and there's a bunch of people requesting that they get a certain spirit in, and they get that certain
cater
spirit
to
in,
that
like,
need, then.
Yeah, they're going to cater to the needs of the people.
Eventually, maybe, hopefully.
If they think they can make money from it.
If we get 5% beer in Utah, I think there's hope.
Yeah, I think there's a hope. I think it's just going to take time, and it's a step-by-step chipping away, you know. They don't really care about local. A lot of the DABC is of the opinion it's illegal for them to you know, cater to local products, which is completely
that's absurd
wrong.
To me.
Yeah, it's weird. Not. I mean, there's been like two lawsuits that somewhat relate to that issue, and one went one way and one went the other way. And the state of Utah's like, we don't want to get sued by the big boys, but that's totally a cop out. You know,
wow.
Yeah,
Tito's isn't going to come in and sue Utah because they carry a local product in a local section. It's just not. It's just not the reality. Well,
that's fucking ridiculous. If they do, like.
Yeah, why?
That would be absolutely just fucking absurd.
Or like, a big brewery to come after you for having the word in
the
your
stone.
Name.
Yeah,
fuck
like that shit's fucking absurd.
After
absurd,
I heard that and like, Mike told me about that, I'm never supporting that brewery in my entire life.
Yeah, those guys suck.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
We won't get into that, but if you guys want to know about that story, the first Holy Stone episode, listen to that one because it's bullshit.
Yeah, Mike kind of took the lead on that
trust
one.
Trust me,
so.
Every time I look at it and I see the arrogant bastard, I look at it, yeah, you're right. The name fits the shoe. The foot fits the shoe. What's the
shoe fits the
shoe fits.
Shoe Cinderella. No, but I was going to ask you, in the craft beer world, are you a craft beer drinker? Are you a beer drinker? Or is this you're just because you distill,
I do.
You just drink liquor?
I do love beer. I don't drink beer. I don't drink beer in quantity.
Okay.
I drink it in quality. So like when I lived in Oregon, for example,
ooh.
I was spoiled with beer, right? So one of the things that I tried to do was never buy the same type of beer twice.
That's cool.
And only buy local beer.
Yeah.
Nice. And I lived there for a little under 2 years or so, and I think I mostly accomplished it. There were a few beers really that cool. I was like, that was really good. I'm drinking that again.
Yeah, of course.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, there's so many choices. And so I do that here too. So I try to, like, if a brewery releases a new beer, I usually try and get my hands on
that's
it.
That's cool. Do you have a favorite brewery right now?
That's
favorites.
Tough. Favorites. Level Crossing has impressed me. They're really good. I've liked most of their beers. TF Brewing is pretty good. It's hard too because there's so many. There actually is a lot of good breweries now, there is. You know.
Which again, we're spoiled in a way, and people kind of take that for granted. Like we are kind of spoiled with these awesome craft
beers. And we all need support too. All the breweries and distilleries. Yeah. Like if you like local breweries and distilleries being around, then you got to support us because we're not recession proof.
Yeah.
It is one of the better industries to be in because if the economy is bad, people are drowning their sorrows. If it's good, people are celebrating.
Right.
They're drowning their sorrows usually in like the cheap stuff too, though.
Yeah, right? the bottom shelf bullshit.
Well, and that's the thing too, is this is a hard industry to be in.
Yeah. Have you guys ever considered making a well?
No.
No?
No. No, well is for the cheap stuff.
Yeah.
We don't make cheap stuff.
Well, like that's what I'm curious. Like Strap Tank, for example, and not to say that it's not a good beer, but like the Flathead is, I mean, it's gone through so many changes.
It's a Helles Lager now.
Yeah, now it's a Helles Lager. At one point, it was more like a Pilsner, and it's been more like an American Lager and an American Light Lager. It's like been all these different styles. Now it's more like a Helles, and I think it's on its best iteration yet. But that's what keeps the doors open. Like it's their kind of cheap, easy beer. It's, you know, when people come in, they're like, oh, I like fucking Coors Light or I like Bud Light. They're like, okay, cool. Flathead. Here you go. It's fucking delicious.
Well, liquor's just not in the same plane in those regards. Sure, we could make a cheap vodka that, you know, it's $10 a bottle and slam it in your well and it'll be at all the bars and that's great. Oh, by the way, you're only making, you know, 50 cents per bottle.
Yeah, it's
you know, cool. Why would I want to spend all this time making a product that I don't believe in? That doesn't taste as good.
Yeah.
Just because it's less effort and I can sell more of it, that doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the difference with beer and liquor. Like beer, you want to be on tap.
Yeah.
You know, with liquor, like it's just a different thing. So I would rather make less bottles of a high quality product.
Yeah.
That it tastes better. I can be proud of it. The profit margin's better. It's just better across the board.
I like that.
Rather than like, hey, we sold 800,000 bottles this year of crap. Like, I don't want to sell crap. Yeah. Like, if I, you know, I could, someone once said, hey, you need to be more of a, what's the word? Capitalist.
You need
to be more of a capitalist here. Like, let's be more of a capitalist. Make some cheap shit. Yeah. Like, that.
God,
and I was like,
gimmicky stuff.
Nah, dude. Like, you can make money doing something good for the world and making quality stuff, or you can make money making shit.
Yeah.
I don't want to make money making shit.
That's respectable, Ethan. Right. That's really cool.
So that's kind of the why not do it well is.
Yeah.
And on our, from everything from our packaging, our bottles, to our ingredients, prohibit us from making a product that cheap because it costs us that much to make it.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, so that's one of the things is just like, if you want to make good stuff,
yeah,
you got to pay the price.
Right.
So going into deeper, and we're just towards the end of January in 2021, what's some goals you have for Holy Stone and your distilling process for, like, for you as a distiller?
So for me as a distiller, I don't know. I'm going to be teaching some people some stuff. So I used to teach classes at the U for their lifelong learning program, you know, about distilling and whiskeys and things like that. So I might do some of that again. You know, we're looking, you know, me and Mike and Barbie are looking into the future for Holy Stone. And I'm not sure, you know, we have some interesting ideas that haven't been done before. So we'll see what takes and what makes sense for us. But me personally as a distiller, you know, I'm going to keep making stuff. Like I said, this year we're probably going to be focused more on whiskey. And, you know, we'll probably release a couple products this year. I would guess some will be limited, like our barrel-aged gin. That'll be extremely limited. You know, but we might have some other
iterations.
My ass
will be there for that, tell you what. Promise you that. When it comes to tasting and touring, how and where can we get a hold of you to do tasting and touring? Do you guys do that?
Yeah, so we are doing it even during COVID. We're, you know, we're taking precautions. We have masks. We have strategically placed fans. We've reduced the size of the typical tour and things like that to help be safer. But yeah, we're doing tours and tastings. You can schedule it on our website, holystonedistilling.com, and you just schedule it right there. So or if you know, give us a call if you're not finding a time that works for you. We're pretty flexible. We're usually willing. Either one of us is usually there anyways.
That's really
cool. Nice.
Yeah.
And are you cool with people just coming up to you and asking you random ass questions, just like picking your brain?
Most of the time.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's annoying, but it's okay.
I get that. I get that. But I'm glad you're open to, you know, being like you're passionate about your craft that you're willing to talk about.
Yeah. Anyway. I don't have any secrets. I feel like, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years or a little more than 10 years, and I have almost, I mean, you always second guess yourself. I always triple check my math and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it kind of feels good to have some confidence in what I'm doing, but I don't have any secrets. You know, I just do it. So, and a lot of it's by feel and by taste, and I'm not concerned that if I wrote down my recipe and handed it to somebody that they're going to be able to reproduce it, because it's just not that simple. Yeah. So
seems like distilling definitely is a lot more complicated.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
the heads and tails and heart and that kind of stuff.
It's really cool.
It's enough of an art that I'm not worried.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I feel pretty secure in my ability to create art through liquor.
That's badass.
And so I will answer pretty much any question, you know, even if it's pretty specific. In general, I'll answer it. So I've helped lots of distilleries and people getting going, you know, and some of these questions can save tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to ask them. If you don't ask them, you don't know what it could have done.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So
that's interesting. So I think this is the time where we go to our almost news and other stuff. Mm-hmm. I got something for you that our producer found the other day.
Uh-oh.
So it's a South African gin called Indolvu. It's made with botanicals harvested from pachyderm poop, which, for those who don't know, is elephant dung.
Mm-hmm.
And so this elephant dung, basically the botanicals are forged by elephants because they pick and choose what they eat. And so they're very particular in what they eat. They absorb less than half of what they eat, so the plant diet they have is pretty intact.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making high-quality spirits since 2018 with elephant dung.
Interesting.
So I don't know if you guys have heard that, but this is really cool. Have you heard of that, Ethan?
I haven't heard of that, but I'm guessing, you know, elephants are probably more discerning than some of our regulatory bodies in the United States. So it's probably pretty good stuff.
Right. I mean, they say it's a lot. It's have a lot of grassy fruit and bark roots in the elephant dung. Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about making a liquor out of dung of some type of animal?
Not specifically. There's some things that grow in dung that might be pretty interesting to use.
So you're not throwing out
my
the window.
Fair share of liquors that taste like dung.
Oh, I thought you could say you taste your fair share. Elephant dung. I'm like, damn, what? There we go. But you're okay with the idea of messing around with that kind of.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've seen a dead goat thrown into a dunder pit.
Stop.
At a rum distillery.
No way.
So yeah, man. I mean, you're working with bacterias, and sometimes the origination of those bacterias may not be from something too savory or delicious, but the bacteria itself might provide a delicious thing.
So besides the goat, what's the weirdest thing you put in one of your distills?
Well, I didn't put the goat in it, just so you know.
Right.
That was a dunder pit. So a dunder pit is a way to cultivate bacteria for rum making.
Okay.
Which we're not making any rums yet, but we won't be doing that type of thing.
You'll be throwing goats.
We will be throwing goats.
Why has someone got a huge order of goats?
We will be doing some pechuga.
What is pechuga?
Pechuga is a style of mezcal. Where you put a chicken in the still. So kind of like with our botanicals for the gin, we'll be doing the same thing, but with different meats.
Wow.
So that'll be kind of a funky experiment. We'll see.
What's the purpose?
See what happens.
It's kind of like a worm in the bottle kind of thing? Or?
No. Have you had a mezcal?
I've had some mezcals.
Next time.
I love mezcal.
Yeah. Just look for a pechuga style mezcal. And that's what it means.
Yeah.
So, and we'll probably do it with different types of meats, and I designed a still especially for that capability. So we'll see what happens.
It's like you can put those chicken nuggets from Japan in there, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
That might be cool. Hey,
yeah. No, it's usually raw, and then it cooks during the process. But yeah,
we'll just get it before they cook it.
Yeah, maybe.
Wow, that's a good idea. I like that. But what can us as Tastemasters do to help you guys as Holy Stone at all? What can we do to help you guys?
Just like I said, vote with your dollar. You know, support local. You know, pay attention to how people are making things, and you know, we're pretty proud of the way we do things. There's nothing wrong with the way other people do things, but we produce the products that we want to produce and that we want to drink, and hopefully other people want to drink them. Yeah. So if you want to drink them, then drink them.
Nice.
So yeah, talk about us, whatever.
Because I think you guys are our first distillery on our podcast, and then we've done you guys twice now. Yeah. I guess we kind of like you a lot. Good.
That's okay. Yeah.
But this time we had the Cerulea here, which we only had a sample last time, and mm-hmm. Wyatt and I geeked out about it because we have a beer, a sour. It's called the Cosmic Fog that uses the butterfly pea blossom, and it's cool to see the we put glitter in it, so it has like that cosmic fog. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's really cool. It's
I thought they'd be good together.
I think you should, like, a Jaeger bomb, shot it.
I don't know if I would do that, but like served together, I think that the lavender wouldn't be terrible with like the
drop it.
What's the fruit in the cosmic fog?
Tangerine,
yeah. So I
bet that would work.
Yeah, I think that would work together.
Citrus, yeah.
And they're both, you know, fucking purple.
Gorgeous. Citrusy gins.
We're gonna have to show you that. Yeah, that'd be absolutely cool. Yeah. But hopefully we can bring you on sometime soon, Ethan.
Yeah.
Wyatt, you got any questions for us?
Nah, man, just keep doing what you're doing. It's good stuff.
Yeah, Ethan, thank you so much for coming down.
Bravo Zulu.
Bravo Zulu, yeah. That's exactly what we want to say to you. Yeah. But, I mean, keep kicking ass, and if there's anything we can do to support, or we'll be there for your ground, or, you know, any other releases, we'll be there, because we were there last time, we'll be there. Keep kicking ass, and until the next beverage, bros.
Cool, thanks.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_Audio.